Off the Ball Daily.
A home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
You can never put that many personalities on one pole. Like, even when I'm training and Nathan's training, we're sure we're brothers, but like something always happens where you have a disagreement.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
Are Liverpool retaining the Premier League title?
Up until the weekend, I thought they would, and then I've listened to a few things over the last 24 hours that have influenced me into thinking Arsenal might do it. I think it'll be closer this year. I think could be a 3-4 horse race. Chelsea for me still need a goalkeeper, but you can't overlook what they did in the summer, and they've got some fantastic players. I feel just about plump for Liverpool. I think it'll be Liverpool, Arsenal, City, Chelsea would be my order.
Why do you think Arsenal could win it?
I think at the moment they've not been too much flux in their team. They've improved their 11, but it's not like they've lost loads of key players or anything. Whereas Liverpool have had a bit more of a churn. I would say I think Arsenal, to me, out of the three, four teams at the top, they feel the most settled to me.
Andrew Magan of Arsblog, legend. Good morning.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
We were going to say that as the first question. I'm going to mention that your peer, Dan Bardell, tipped Arsenal for the Premier League title this season, but he said better to actually play it into you. What do you think?
Well, I don't know who that is, but it's possible, isn't it? You know, Arsenal are in reasonable shape after a good summer, so there's a lot of competition. I think it's going to be very difficult, but I think Arsenal have addressed some key issues during the summer transfer window, and there's no reason why they shouldn't feel like they can compete for the Premier League.
Dan is your possibly Aston Villa equivalent, just for context. It has been an impressive summer in terms of acquisition, and I'm keen to talk to you about the recent Athletic Bilbao game, and of course the first day of the season is massive against Manchester United, but I guess the big question for myself, Andrew, is have all the key areas that needed action been actioned over the summer, or is there more work to do?
I think yes is the answer to that. They needed a goalkeeper. They got a goalkeeper with minimum fuss. They needed two central midfielders after two central midfielders left, and they've done that. I think they've upgraded pretty strongly at the base of midfield with Martin Zubimendi, and Christian Norgaard is a very good experience replacement for Jorginho. They obviously needed a striker. They got that done. It was a bit protracted with Sporting playing a bit of hard ball over the add-ons, over the fee for Victor Gyökeres, but that's a signing that's been long overdue for Arsenal, so they got that done. Also brought in Nani Madueke from Chelsea, who brings something a little bit different in the wide areas. They've added a young defender to take some of the burden off William Saliba. So I think if there was a checklist at the start of the summer transfer window, I think all of those things would have been on it. The question now is, will there be something just a little bit extra? You know, the cherry on top of the icing on the cake, if you like. Can Arsenal do something else before the end of the window? We'll wait and see. There's some names being bandied about, but I think it might depend a little bit on getting a few players out, because the squad is very big. And obviously, a bit of money coming in might help them offset another incoming transfer deal.
Who's likely to leave? Sorry, just before we get into that.
Well, I mean, there's players who are very much on the fringes. Fabio Vieira, Reece Nelson, Carl Hayne, who's a young goalkeeper. Alexander Zinchenko is somebody who could potentially leave as well. Albert Zambi-Lokonga, possibly even Jakub Kivior, depending on who's interested in him after the way he finished last season. I think he's garnered quite a bit of interest from clubs around Europe. The question is, with Gabriel on the way back from a big injury and Ricardo Calafiori sort of unconvincing in terms of his own fitness, do they keep Kivior as a bit of insurance in that regard, or do they take the money when it comes, if it comes in? And I think they might be predisposed to taking the money for him, depending on how much it is and when that arrives. So there's scope for players to go out. You know, we were looking at the squad this weekend, trying to pick a team and pick a nine subs, and you're still leaving four or five, maybe even six established players behind, not even in the squad. So there is, I think, a need to make a little bit of room for somebody else to arrive.
As silly as this question sounds, what's more impressive for you at the moment with Arsenal? Is it the starting 11 or the overall squad?
I think the fact that there is depth. You know, Arsenal's biggest issue last season was there wasn't redundancy in key positions. Gabriel Jesus got injured in January. Kai Havertz got injured in February. And Arsenal are basically playing a midfielder up front for the rest of the season. It's a touch unfortunate, I think, you know, to lose two players in the way that they did. But, you know, when you get to the semifinals of the Champions League and you're away at PSG and you need goals and you're looking at the bench and there really isn't anything on the bench, that tells you what you've got to do and how you've got to address those issues. So I think it is more the overall depth, but I'm really pleased with a couple of the key players they brought in. I think Zubimendi's going to be really, really good. And Gyökeres, we'll wait and see how he goes, but they needed a goal scorer. They needed that guy who lives for goals, and he certainly is that when you look at what he's done at Sporting. So to give the team a different dynamic, you know, those two players and the way the team might set up this season, I think they're going to be crucial.
Could you argue that in order to equal the strength of the rest of the positions, that the left side of attack is still arguably an area that needs improvement? And it seems like the club has been heavily linked with Eberechi Eze, but who also has been equally speculated to be interested in joining Tottenham. Eze is a player that would be, as a lot of fun, sounded like a bit of an insult, but he would be like a seriously enjoyable player to watch. Is that the type of player that Arsenal need now? Are they actually fine?
I think your point about the left-hand side is when people look at the Arsenal squad now, it's like, where can the next upgrade happen? Mm. And it looks like the left-hand side, because Leandro Trossard's not getting any younger and Gabriel Martinelli appears to have plateaued a little bit. So people are looking at that area and thinking, is there a way of Arsenal doing something a bit different there? I don't think either of those two are bad players by any means. I just think they're lacking a little bit of consistency when it comes to their end product. As for Eze, I love watching him. He's a brilliant player. I would not complain for a second if he arrived at Arsenal. Yeah. I think he has some really, really interesting qualities. I think they're more suited for a player in the middle of the pitch rather than a left winger or a left-sided attacker. Maybe there's a plan to do something with him there. I'm not 100% sure. But yeah, he feels to me like his best moments come when he's in the middle of the pitch in central areas, and in that sense Arsenal are quite well stocked. You know, they've got Martin Odegaard, they've given a new contract to Ethan Nwaneri, Declan Rice is there, Mikel Merino is there, Havertz potentially can play in that area. But I think if you're looking for something a little bit extra, that little bit of something special before the end of the window, he's certainly a player who would be well appreciated at Arsenal and by Arsenal fans because of the qualities that he has, the ability to travel with the ball, to dribble, to produce from central areas. I think he'd be a lot of fun for sure.
Miguel Delaney speculating today that there might be games where Odegaard doesn't start and that Kai Havertz might be picked for his physical qualities in specific big games. Not that Odegaard would be rested, but that actually they would feel like picking Havertz ahead of him will give them a better chance of winning the game. And this is clearly well sourced. He's talking about staff at the club. So can you talk to us a bit about that and how you see that might maybe, first off, do you agree? And secondly, what would be the type of situation where that might happen?
It's a great question. I can't really see it myself, to be honest. I can't see, unless there's a formation change, unless Mikel Arteta is thinking about playing Kai Havertz and Victor Gyökeres as a front two, that's the only way I can see that happening. Not with Havertz as a direct replacement for Martin Odegaard in that area of the pitch. Because I think, you know, Odegaard did not have his best season by any means last time out, but I think there were mitigating factors. He had a big injury. He was brought back. There was no replacement. He was asked to play pretty much every minute of every game. At the same time, then he was without Bukayo Saka on the right-hand side. He was without Ben White, and that triangle, those three have been really, really brilliant together for Arsenal for a couple of years. He didn't have a striker. Mikel Merino did a really good job, I think, but he's not naturally a striker. And if you're a creative midfielder like Martin Odegaard, you want players like Havertz or Gyökeres making runs and making movements in the box that allow you to unlock them. So I think there were reasons why he didn't hit his best. But the only scenario I can really think where Odegaard doesn't start and Kai Havertz does is if Arteta goes with, let's say, a traditional two in midfield with Rice and Zubimendi, and plays Havertz up front with Gyökeres. I like Havertz. I think he's been very effective for Arsenal, but he's not really a guy who's going to help you create in that sort of final third pocket where Odegaard can definitely... he has the craft, you know, to find those passes that I don't think is really Havertz's big strength.
That game I mentioned against Bilbao at the start of the chat there, 3-0 victory last weekend. For people who missed it, the starting 11, unbelievably strong. Andrew, Ryan goal, Calafiori, Gabriel Saliba, Timber, Zubimendi and Rice in midfield, Odegaard ahead of them, and then the front three of Saka, Gyökeres and Martinelli, which is maybe the area that you can strengthen. But by all accounts from pre-season, Zubimendi has been the most impressive new acquisition.
Yeah, I mean, he's the one who's been there the longest, who's seen a bit more of him. I mean, Gyökeres had only been with the club a week when they played that game against Athletic Bilbao. So I think Zubimendi, it's... What people are looking for from Arsenal this season is something a little bit different in terms of how they play, something a bit more unpredictable. When you're forced to play more or less the same starting 11 week in, week out, I think you do just by the nature of it become predictable. What was interesting about that Bilbao game was Zubimendi was brought in primarily as a deep-lying midfielder, a number six, but he interchanged quite often with Declan Rice. And it also allowed Odegaard to play higher up the pitch. I think that was a really interesting aspect of that, where you, for me, you don't want Martin Odegaard dropping between your centre halves and picking up the ball and trying to dictate play from deep areas. You want him sort of on the halfway line and then driving into those into the opposition half, because he's got the ability and the vision to release others. So those two, Rice and Zubimendi, operating the way they did in tandem, sort of taking it in turns, was an interesting development for the Arsenal midfield this season. I think that's probably some of what we're going to see that will be a bit different.
Ernesto Valverde, the Bilbao manager, was fiercely complimentary about how good Arsenal were and talked about the levels. Mikel Arteta is a man who's very focused on the finer details. Seems that one change he's made this summer among plenty is the removal of the tunnel at the Emirates. Was Arteta's justification is that it improves the atmosphere, that it's louder and it's therefore more intimidating for the opposition as you walk out?
I mean, good for him. I don't really know how much difference that makes in the grand scheme of things, to be honest. But he does these things,
doesn't he, Andrew? This is his joy almost, is the specific detail.
Yes, it's true. He's got a track record of strange little things that he thinks might make a difference. And listen, I think if you finish second 3 years in a row and you're trying everything you can to get over the line to finish first and to compete against some really good teams in the Premier League, you're not looking at just the transfer market. You're looking at, you know, how you motivate your squad, how you build the team, you know, how you operate in the transfer market. And if he feels that removing the sort of fold in, fold out tunnel when the teams come out can give his team 0.001% of a margin, a better chance to win a game, he'll do it. We might look at it with our eyebrows raised a little bit and think, does it really make any difference? But if he thinks it does, then that's what's going to happen at Arsenal. That's the way things are at this club. If Arteta wants something to happen, it will happen.
Do Arsenal fans love Arteta?
I think Arsenal fans have a real appreciation for what Mikel Arteta has done. You know, there's always an element, you know, when you don't win a trophy after 5 years, there's going to be an element of pressure. There's going to be an element of scrutiny. I don't think you can, and this, Jerry, you know this, we've had these conversations about Arsene Wenger back in the day. It's hard to look at one group as just sort of a collective, a Borg. There's always going to be a variance in opinion. I think there is a big amount of pressure on Mikel Arteta this summer. You know, the transfer business that Arsenal have done says, we're going for it. We want to win now. We want to win this season. We want to win the season after that. They haven't brought in a lot of young players. They brought in experience, which tells you that they're really trying to push over the line and finish first. You don't have to go too far back in time to see a much different Arsenal and see an Arsenal that was not competitive and an Arsenal that was floundering. And Arteta's brought Arsenal a long way. Is he the guy to get us over the line? I really, really hope so. I think he's done an incredible job. But, you know, the football world is the way it is, and there's going to be scrutiny and there's going to be pressure on him. And I think that's going to be part of this season's experience for Arsenal fans, is that spotlight on the club and on Arteta. I think more than any other club in the Premier League this season, they'll be just, they're shining it on Arsenal because they've been so close. They need to get it done. And there's sort of no escaping that.
Is consistency the most overlooked quality in management, not just these days, but ever, I suppose? Because you talk about the 3 seasons in a row in second position. And like, you have to remind yourself of when Mikel Arteta first took over in his first job, when Freddie Ljungberg was the interim manager, and how much improvement has been made in that time. But it's always labelled against him. There was the FA Cup 6 months in, the COVID FA Cup 2020 against Chelsea, but since then, nothing. And you look at the likes of Manchester United, they've won a trophy, but they're a rabble in comparison to what Arsenal have done. He's done everything but lift the trophy. But it feels that there's not a degree of suspicion about Arteta, but a feeling of underwhelm, that he doesn't quite deliver when it comes to it. And then you look at this outlay this summer and it feels like, it's like too dramatic to say, well, it's now or never, Mikel, because you have a great squad and you have to go one step further.
Well, I mean, there is an element of that. There is an element of that. And I think, you know, if you're in a position like Arsenal are in and you just can't get it over the line, and as a manager, ultimately, you're responsible for that. If you can't get the team from second to first at least once, people will ask questions about you. Like, are you a winner? Are you capable of building a winning team? You know, it's sort of overlooked that. Not overlooked, but, you know, we have to recognize that Arsenal have been competing against, you know, a Manchester City team that won 4 in a row. It's really, really difficult. Last season, Liverpool won the title. They were deserved champions. Arsenal fell short for all kinds of reasons, and we don't need to sort of open up that Pandora's box again. But it will be about how Arsenal react. Like, it was a little step backwards domestically last season. They took a step forward in Europe, getting to the semi-finals of the Champions League. There's encouragement to be taken from that. But a step backwards doesn't mean you can't go forwards again. You know, as Liverpool have demonstrated over the years, you can have an off-season and come back and go again. I think that's the big challenge for Arteta and for Arsenal this season, is to do exactly that.
The reason I think that many people would have confidence that they will actually be able to do it is that when you look at their starting 11, it's not that different from last year. It's just much better. So obviously, you know, you talked about the signings, but there is a real thread of consistency all through the team, except that they're going to have a striker who they believe in and a central midfielder who allows hopefully more from Rice and more from Odegaard. And if Saka is fully fit, it's a transformed team, but it's actually very consistent. So everybody knows exactly what their job is and what they're supposed to do. Whereas when you look around the league, there could be a significant enough change at Liverpool. There could be a significant enough change at City, and that team hadn't bedded in. And Chelsea maybe are finding consistency through the end of the season, through the World Club Cup, and will start with a relatively, but they've also signed loads of players. So while there has been many changes in the depth, the first 11 isn't going to be massively changed. And I think maybe that is why I'm starting to think I can see it.
Well, I hope so. Look, you can make a case either way, can't you? That, like, Liverpool, oh, they brought in too many players. But look, if they bring in Alexander Isak on top of what they've already done, it's kind of ridiculous for the rest of the Premier League. Maybe they have some teething troubles, but maybe they just score like 4 or 5 goals every game because they've got all that quality up front. I don't know. I take your point, though, about Arsenal. I think what they've done quite cleverly is build on top of what's already there. And I think after, it's strange. You know, Arsenal finished second last season and it was seen as this huge, huge disappointment. And you have other big clubs in the Premier League floundering around towards the bottom and they don't get that same kind of scrutiny. Arsenal have a good team. They are a good team. They've got some brilliant, brilliant players from back to front, and they've added some really good players this summer as well. So that's the encouraging thing for Arsenal fans, is that they're augmenting what was already good, even if they fell a bit short last season.
I suppose your point about Man City is that they were a super team, right? This was like billions spent to put the hierarchy and apparatus in place to attract Pep, they had the best academy outside of Barcelona, potentially, who knows, like one of the all-time great academies that was banging out players and realizing cash money that they could then invest in the best players in the world. It doesn't feel like this version of Man City is at that level. Is there a fear that maybe Liverpool are cresting to a similar level and that actually that's the trouble here, is that no matter how good Arsenal gets, there could be a 99-point season coming from Liverpool?
Yeah, it's quite possible. It's quite possible. I would hope, you know, for the sake of competitiveness in the Premier League, that no team goes and does a 99-point season. I'd love for the top teams to take points off each other, for there to be, like, you know, more than a... Listen, I'd prefer Arsenal out in front, obviously, but I think from a competitive standpoint, if there's a sort of equalization of talent and quality across the top teams, it might make it a more competitive title race. So we don't have a team that, like, in March, everyone is going, well, they're going to be the champions unless they make an absolute... mess of it in the final couple of months. So maybe that's what benefits Arsenal. You know, City spent quite a lot in January. They spent quite a bit this summer as well. The question for me about City is, you know, what's Pep's motivation here? He's never had to do a rebuild anywhere. He's never been anywhere long enough where that the cycle of success has finished. Like, he's left, obviously, he left Barcelona, he left Bayern with success. But he's sort of gone through a cycle, and I wonder about, you know, how into it he is. Is he really motivated to go again? Is he really... Sometimes you see him interviewed and he's like, he talks like he's absolutely exhausted by football and by the demands of the job and by the expectations and by the, I guess, the standards that he set, right, at Manchester City, which are incredible, even with all the caveats. The 115 caveats we can't really mention, but
he was scratching his face off last year with stress.
But that's exactly it. So maybe he's renewed. Maybe he sees these new players and new faces in the dressing room as something that gives him this motivation to go again. But that's yet to be proven. So I'm curious to see how that goes. Chelsea have bought all the players, which seems to be their modus operandi right now. Just buy all the players and sell the ones you don't want, sometimes to Arsenal. but they're going to be good. I think, you know, Liverpool will be really good. Manchester United, they've probably spent a bit more in their forward line than they should have without addressing issues further back, but they've completely reconstituted their front three. So they may be a threat. They may take points off some of the big teams as well. So we'll see how it all plays out. I do hope it's competitive. I think Arsenal's best chance of winning the league is if it's a more equal title race than, let's say, a two-horse race between Arsenal-Liverpool or between Arsenal-Man City. I just think, you know, the league probably needs that as well. So we'll see how it goes.
That's an unbelievably exciting moment to live now, because, as Ger was outlining, all the clubs that have strengthened, and it's all like the biggest names in the Premier League. And with that in mind, from the Arsenal perspective, are you concerned at all about Spurs?
No.
Did you enjoy last night?
I didn't watch. I saw what happened, and that's funny, but I just, you know, I just cannot get in any way interested in anything like the Super Cup. It's just like the Club World Cup. Who cares?
Okay. That's nothing to do with Spurs, so it's more the competition.
Well, yes, but to your first point, still no.
Is that because they just literally haven't strengthened enough or overall with the...
I mean, I think they've brought in a very good manager. Thomas Frank did a brilliant job at Brentford. I just think over the years, you know, they've brought in other really, really good managers and very successful managers. And there is something within the DNA of that club that overrides the success that people like Jose Mourinho and Antonio Conte have had pretty much everywhere else they've gone in their career. So look, you know, they'll probably be a decent team this season, but I don't really see them as title contenders.
One last question from me. I don't know how important preseason ever is, or how teams actually judge whether or not they're ready for the first game of the season, but do you think Arsenal are going to hit the ground running? It's a big opening fixture. It's a potential to make a statement, to smash one of your rivals in the mouth and go, no, not today.
I will be honest and say that preseason wasn't hugely convincing until the Athletic Bilbao game. That was a very, very good performance. But again, it's hard to gauge how, when the manager was picking sort of mix and match teams for most of the games, it was very difficult to gauge how performance levels really ought to be. The fact that he picked essentially a first choice 11 for that Athletic Bilbao game and Arsenal played really well is encouraging. So hopefully another good week on the training ground means they're ready to go. As you've said, they're pretty settled, generally speaking, and it's just about slotting in one or two new pieces, and I think those guys will be up to speed. So fingers crossed.
Final one. Can you tell us about this kid? And he is a kid, 15-year-old Max Dauman.
Well, I was out in preseason in Singapore, and I watched him in the two games out there, and it's sort of ridiculous.
Right.
I can't really explain it any other way to see a 15-year-old come on and do what he did. He brought him on in the Newcastle game, which I thought was very interesting because Newcastle, as we know, are a very physical team. So he brought Max Dauman on, who's not 16 until December, by the way. And the first thing that happened was he got clattered in the face by Joe Linton, which is one of the things that Joe Linton is really, really good at. So fair play. So was it an attempt to physically intimidate a young man, a kid, basically? If it was, it didn't work, because the next time Dauman got the ball, he just sort of took off and ran into the box and beat a couple of players, and it was Joe Linton who fouled him. On the basis of what we've seen from preseason, if you were picking a squad for Old Trafford on merit, he probably should be in it. Not in the team, but in the squad. That's how good he's been in preseason for Arsenal. But of course, he is only 15, and you have to have a sort of level of care and responsibility for a guy. But I think he is, if not now, somebody who people will become more familiar with over the course of this season. I think he'll get chances in the EFL Cup games. And I think the talent is such that he will probably be a fixture in the first team squad by the end of the season.
Right.
No pressure. But, you know, it's really hard to find the balance between this kid is 15 and it's too much to ask of a 15-year-old versus what you actually see with your eyes when he's on the pitch playing against grown men. It's kind of crazy.
What is so crazy and unbelievable about him? Is there a player he's like, or what does he actually do?
I don't want to sort of compare him to anybody, but physically he doesn't look out of place. What he does with the ball is phenomenal. There's an intelligence to his game. If I did have to make a comparison, they're not the same kind of player at all. But if you remember when a 16-year-old Cesc Fabregas broke through at Arsenal, he just looked ready. He looked like this step up was not a big deal for him. And that's the best compliment I can pay Max Dauman. I think the ability he has is obvious, and the composure and the intelligence and the awareness is there already. It can improve. It will get better. Physically, he's got some way to go to mature, but he doesn't look out of place. So it's, you know, it's again trying to dampen down the hype, but also recognizing that when you see something a little bit special, you have to acknowledge that.
And number 10, is there any potential that he might be the solution on the left wing?
I don't know. I mean, he played on the right. That's where Mikel Arteta played him in preseason, and he played him on the right-hand side. So when Bukayo Saka would come off, he put Max Dauman on. I think the skill set is such that you would want him as he matures to be a more central player. So maybe that's where he'll end up, but it's early days yet. And I think if and when he does get games this season, he'll play on the flanks. But, you know, going forward, that ability and that ability to beat players in tight spaces would be very useful in central areas.
Just to introduce a little bit of existential dread, Max Dauman, born New Year's Eve 2009.
There you go.
Jesus.
That doesn't make us feel old at all, does it?
Andrew Mangan, a pleasure.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Always great. Cheers.
It's exciting, isn't it? Love when a player comes through. 15.
A December birthday. It's a terrible sports birthday.
It's Same. Yeah.
Terrible. You would have made it other if you'd just been born a few weeks later.
I don't know how
you
got sure when I didn't. That's a weird one. Mick Maloney says on YouTube, let me find this, please, bear with me, is that he's never seen a player like Max Domen. Now, when you see this...
He's 6 foot tall.
Yeah,
already.
6 foot of 15.
Yeah.
He could end up documentary tall if he's 6 foot of 15.
Who knows? And maybe he ends up as a central striker and he's the replacement for Jokeres in 3 or 4 years.
The specific comment from Mick Maloney, Domen is an unbelievable talent, haven't ever seen anything like him. Now, I don't know what Mick Maloney's scouting prowess is, but I'll believe our fans that this guy is seriously special. I haven't seen him.
For England under 17, he's played 17 games, scored 11 goals from like a midfield attacking position. That's a... Anyway, look, too much, too soon.
You can still appreciate it for what it is.
Oh, totally,
you
enjoy it, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's.
He'll always have this hype moment, no matter what happens.
Keane was in touch earlier on saying, morning, man, Paul Joyce casually breaking the Giovanni Leone news earlier in the week. He was, yeah.
On here, exclusively.
He was like, yeah, they're going to sign Leone and it won't stop them signing Guehi. That's my one thing about Liverpool is that there's just a lot of flux and it'll take them a bit of time. There's a super team in the making, but can they get there by Christmas or is it actually next year?
Yeah, that's what I think. I think Arne Slot had such a good debut campaign that he'll be given a little bit of a grace period by the fans and owners, crucially. If they don't win the league this year, look, just stay with us. Look how much change we've made.
Push the chips into the Champions League.
Year 2, 3 and 4 domestically going to be sensational. Exactly. Let's focus on Europe. Great time to be a Liverpool supporter.